Welcome to the New Doctoral Student Consortium, or NDSC, podcast. This episode is a special feature on the MED, or MED, division of the Academy of Management. I was able to meet up with the division's outgoing chair, Mairead Brady, and the incoming chair, Aaron Kaza, during the AOM conference in Chicago, and sat down with them to discuss the MED division and education more broadly.
Great. Well, listen, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be on a podcast of this nature.
My name is Mairead Brady.
That's Mairead. It rhymes with parade. And as most people can hear, I'm Irish. So, I'm based in Trinity College in Dublin. So, again, if you know Dublin at all, you know that Trinity is in the centre of Dublin. And it's a lovely, lovely campus. And I think everybody should visit it at some stage.
It's gorgeous.
It's gorgeous. It's gorgeous. So I'm based in the business school there. And I've been there for about 25 years. So I have seen all the changes in teaching. I have seen the students change. I've seen the faculty change. And I have seen technology come into the business school and come into how we teach, what we teach, and who we teach. So, great changes. I'm in an old university, but we're very engaged with being dynamic in the classroom, dynamic with technology, and becoming our being management educators to the future.
Great. How did you get interested in the education side of academia?
I entered academia in an unusual way in that I was working in industry and I was also studying at night. And what I realized is what I was working on during the day and what I was learning at night didn't align. This difference between theory and practice intrigued me. And I said, this is something I would like to investigate, as to what are we doing in the classroom and why isn't it the same as what I'm doing in practice? And really that led me on this road to education, but also it led me on that road to always be questioning what I say in the classroom and what's happening in practice. So I did a PhD, obviously, and I joined Trinity College in Dublin, and I joined in the area of marketing and technology. So I joined just when technology, or you won't remember this, but the dot-com boom. So I came into a world where there wasn't any much technology, and then I have watched as technology has come into the management education classroom, and I have seen the launch of AI, etc. So I've always think that to be an educator, you must question, challenge, and investigate. And I think so much of what we do in the academy and with PhDs is orientated towards research, but yet so much of our contribution ends up in the classroom as educators. And that's why the MED division wants to support each and every one of us in that educator role.
A few questions I'm sure some of our listeners have are, what does MED stand for? What is the division about? Also, what is your role in it, Mairead? And how can students themselves get involved?
MED stands for Management, Education and Development Division. So we are the division that is all about teaching and education and learning. So every single member of the academy is an educator in some shape, size or form, and MED is the division that supports them. So we have a slogan which says research, which is research in management education. We have educate. How do we be great educators? How do we become great educators? And our last thing is inspire. So how do we inspire through our research? But how do we inspire through when we share our research? And how do we inspire when we educate? So MED is a division that looks at education and us as educators. I'm the current chair of the MED division, and just for your listeners, we're always looking for volunteers. We always want particularly PhD students and junior faculty, because you're the future. I mean, people like me have been around a long time, and we will move out and we will hand the baton to you guys now and into the future. So please do join MED. So the way we run it in MED is that we have a 5-year term and we all start as PDW chair, then program chair, chair elect. I'm the current chair of MED and I will be the past chair of MED from Monday the I don't know, is it the 11th of August? And I will hand over to Aaron Casals, who you're going to interview now, and he will become the chair and I will be the past chair. But we have a lot of roles, we have a lot of positions, and we really are interested in volunteers. If anybody wants to volunteer, just come onto our site, click join now or volunteer here, and you'll see our website will give you the directions in how to join us and support us. MED are delighted to support and to be sponsors of the new doctoral student consortium.
Thank you so much.
That, this is our first year of sponsoring that, and I was in the room in Chicago with you guys, and there was 110 people in that room, and the buzz was magic. And I thought that if we have helped in any way to create that buzz, MED is delighted to be part of such a great team. I just want to compliment the team that runs that consortium. It is not easy to run a consortium of 110 people, but every single person I've met said that they were having a great, great time. So I just like to say to people, come to that come to that academy event, come to that new doctoral student consortium event, because it is a great way to start your career, both as a researcher and an educator. So well done to each and every one of you. I hand on heart, I really enjoyed that event.
We're very grateful to have your sponsorship. How can MED help, especially like I'm a relatively new PhD student, I'm going to be TAing this semester, but that's really mostly just observing, and then I get thrown into the deep end to teach in the spring, and I want to be good, and I want to get good evals. So how can MED help me with that?
I think your question is brilliant, because every single one of us, when we walk into the classroom, we know we're going to be evaluated. And knowing that you're going to be evaluated makes you kind of, the initial reaction is to panic. You go, I'm going to be evaluated. But what MED does, it gives you a range of skills, a range of abilities, and it showcases you the leading research in scholarship of teaching and learning. So what are the scholars who are studying teaching and learning telling you about what you should be doing in the classroom, what you could be doing in the classroom, you know, best practices in the classroom? So we have a whole range of research available that we disseminate to our members. We also have BDWs, webinars, podcasts, all designed to support our members to become better educators. So, and the last thing we do is we inspire through the membership. By being a member, you talk to members, you've got a community of practice, you have this cohort that you can deal with. And I'm just going to answer your next question, is how do I get to all these resources? Yes. Well, how you get to all these resources is through our website. So we have a website called MED-AOM, so it's the MED division of the Academy of Management, and on it we have our webinar series. So you can click in, evaluate or elevate your teaching. You can click in on how to teach with AI and how to unravel the complexities of AI in the classroom and how to make impactful contributions from your teaching, etc. So the main protocol is our website year round, but obviously the conference. Come to the conference. That's where we have our conference papers. That's where we have our PDWs, and that's where we have that community of practice.
A key question I have for you is, how can we be great educators?
Thanks for asking that, because I think that's the question that everybody wants to know, how to be a great teacher, how to be a great educator. And I think there's two things. Is first of all, wanting to educate. That when you walk into every classroom, you understand the responsibility of being in front of that classroom. And remember that they're not that interested in the content. They're interested in the how of that content, how you explain it to them, how you engage with them, and how you see them in the classroom as not just, you know, not just a person, but an actual, a learning, that you want that student to learn. So when we decide to be management educators, what we're saying is, I want to inspire these people. I want to open up their minds, and I want to almost rock their world. I want them to think differently. When they walk out of my classroom, I want them to say, I didn't know that, or I didn't think like that, or I didn't see it in that way. But now that I have seen it in that way, I can now think differently about this. Our main role is to develop the person. Skills are important, knowledge is important, but the third kind of pillar on this is this idea of developing the person. So when you think about being a teacher, the best thing you can do is think about the teacher that you liked best. So if you think of the teacher you like best, you think, why did I like that teacher so much? What was it that he or she did that I can remember? And it isn't what they said to you, it's how they made you feel in that moment, in that class, and how they challenged you and supported your learning. And that's what you want to become. You want to become that teacher that people say, yes, I learned from him or from her. And I am different because of that class. So I think in some ways, the med gives the educator the support they need when they're deciding who to become, how to become that educator of the future. So med is one of the large divisions of the Academy of Management, and its role is to support research into education, is to support teachers in the classroom, and to support best practices in how to be an educator.
As part of AOM, a lot of the sessions that we see, the PDWs, are all about conducting research, publishing research, really heavy focus on that aspect. But everyone who's a member of AOM is either an educator or a potential educator. So how does MED fit into that, and where do you see that going in the future with AOM?
You're definitely right in how you've characterized the conference. Traditionally, there were only two voices speaking about teaching, really. There is some teaching nested in each division. So there's teaching in the rough in the management organization cognition division, for example. But most of it has either been the TLC, Teaching and Learning Conference, which is a separate thing you pay additional enrollment for. And then there's the MED, our division. And the Academy as a whole, as the incoming division chair, I got a chance to attend the Board of Governors meeting, so I got a peek at what's coming in the future. And there is going to be a growing emphasis in the entire Academy focused on teaching. You're exactly right that if we took away all the tuition dollars and all the students, a lot of universities would be in a lot of trouble. And so having recognized that, we are no longer the voice crying in the wilderness. The other divisions and the head of Academy as a whole are coming around to emphasize teaching as well as research. So research continues to be important, it always will be, but the Academy as a whole has realized that there's more opportunity to enhance members' teaching and to benefit more members by doing so. Our hope is that MED, having been there already, we can sort of help to organize that and lead that charge if possible. Occasionally, I might be moved to tears when I read a research article, but more often, the sort of the pivotal important memory is when I think back or when someone taught me something new. And hopefully, I more often have students come up to me and tell me they really enjoyed my class and how they changed this or changed that, than I have anyone stop me on the street and say, hey, did you write that article? It changed my world. So research is important, but the payoffs for teaching, I think, are more immediate and more tangible.
And I think you touch more people, because I certainly have research articles that if I saw the person, I'd be like, I loved your article. I've used it so many times. It's amazing. But the number of me's that are going to do that are nothing compared to the number of undergrads and graduate students that you will touch through your teaching.
Yes. For the majority of us, the number of times our articles have been cited, all summed up, will probably be fewer than the number of students we see over the course of a 20, 30-year career.
Absolutely.
And each of them, if we're successful, goes on to be a manager of some sort who then influences the lives of tens or hundreds of other people.
Yeah. In contrast to our research focus, the exhibition floor at AOM is almost always all teaching resources, textbook places, simulation places. Are any of them ones that you've worked with before and are great teaching resources?
I would suggest searching. Again, you probably have one rep who's more active on your campus than the other. If that's Wiley or Elsevier or whoever, McGraw-Hill, they're going to push their books, and they might be good, but it's worth talking with colleagues, the faculty, who are, they really like this textbook, or they use this simulation. And also, there may not always be a choice. Often, in order to standardize across 16 sections of OB or strategy, it may be a standardized text. So I would start with what's required, and then beyond that, look at possibilities, because there are interesting things, and increasingly more available now, the magic of technology. People can share things more easily. I will note, it's worth looking at open source, too. That doesn't get as much promotion because there's no budget, but there are a number of freely available textbooks, cases, even simulations, and those can be nice additions. You know, if you're stuck with textbook XYZ because that's what your department uses, but you would really like more, I don't know, a better fit with social sustainability or with diversity issues, and that's not in the core textbook, you may find a really good free resource. So you don't have to make your students buy a second $300 textbook, but you can still bring those materials in. So searching for the open source material, I think, would be a good choice.
A lot of our listeners are going to be early stage doctoral students. Most likely they'll be expected to teach at some point during their PhD years. What can they be doing in those first couple of years to set themselves up for success as educators when they get around to teaching their first class?
I think that things that a new teacher could do to get ready is talk to those folks who are just a few years ahead of you. The doctoral students who are on the market now and who taught last year, the year before, can be very helpful. Another possibility is the almost inevitable teaching faculty in universities. They're called different names, but those folks, a lot of their job, maybe all of their job, is teaching. So they've learned the tricks and the secrets. You can probably take some lessons from them rather than relearn or reinvent the wheel, if you like the cliche. Another possibility is to look for outside resources. So I know that Mairead mentioned earlier that we have a number of resources linked from the Med page. There are several years of webcasts now. There's information there. And happily, back to this AOM initiative, AOM Teach is supposed to be launching soon, which is intended to be a centralized repository of discipline-based teaching resources. So if you know your teaching strategy, or if you're teaching OB, you should be able to search and filter on things that are available for those topics.
Wow, that sounds really cool. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, for people who do want more support, we have a professional development certificate. And if you attend three of our PDWs, you will get that certificate. It's really handy for new doctoral students to build their CV and say, I attended and I learned in these three PDWs. So we're supporting you in your engagement with your own role as an educator, and we're also supporting your development of your CV with this professional development certificate. And we'll tell people in Copenhagen next year more about that, or there's more information about that on our website.
So I know every year for NDSC, one of the most popular panels we do is about the variety of career options there are. We always have someone who's coming from a traditional tenure or tenure track position, heavy on research, but then we have panelists who come from a variety of career choices, balanced schools, or they have consulting that they also do, or a wide variety of things. And I think that's something that students don't always know is an option before they hear it at NDSC. So I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on the career possibilities for folks that go through a management or management associated PhD.
Yeah, it's a very good point. One of the best things about NDSC is getting that out. Whatever school a student is at, they're being imprinted with that school's model. If they are aiming at training practitioners, you know, the consultant action research types, a student might think that's all there is. If you're at an R1 school where the main thing is getting publications in 5 top journals, you might think that's all there is. There are, in fact, many, many options. And so MED has tried, NDSC is trying to make students aware of the possibilities. If you don't think you're exactly the right fit with the template for your school, just between me and the listeners, don't talk about that necessarily. From a political point of view, it might not be. If you're at an R1 school and you want to be a consultant, don't broadcast that. But also don't quit your R1 school. The training you get is important and useful, but just know that there are other options, and you can find those other people through NDSC and the Academy more generally, and talk with them to find out the secrets of if you want to be at a balanced school or at a teaching school or a practice-focused consulting and teaching school. There are many, many options. Stay with the program you have. The sunk cost fallacy is not a fallacy in this sense. Take the momentum you've got, finish your program there, but know that you have more options than you might think from your program.
Is there any, you know, current trend, fad, or innovation in teaching that you're really excited about?
I personally don't do it well myself yet, but I think that I like the idea of the gamification that is rising, taking the tricks that the Silicon Valley folks use to make us addicted to our phones and make students addicted to learning your topic seems like a great strategy to sort of turn that around on them. So I'm excited about that. It's not new, but I really like simulations. I think that students care less about how much they know than about how much they can do, in my opinion. And so if they can win a game, for example, if they can win the simulation and beat the rest of the class, that'll get them to engage with the material they'll learn by accident. It's another gamification trick, but I think that anything you can do to make students connect to the material. So in strategy classes, for example, they have those games where you run virtual companies and you try to get better stock performance than everyone else in your class. I know an HR colleague who one of the less exciting traditional HR concepts is job analysis. And so rather than picking a random job and having students analyze it, she has them look at their future career. They think they want to be a dentist, a farmer, a management consultant, whatever. There are publicly available resources from labor statistics, ONET, those kinds of places. She has them analyze that job because then they care and they put more work in. So the secret would be to get students to want to meet you halfway, not by telling them how important your topic is, because they won't believe you, but by making them see how important it is, by connecting something that they care about.
I know a popular trend in education and the world right now is around AI.
What are your perspectives on that? How have you engaged with that with Ahmed?
I love the whole idea of AI in the classroom, because the initial reaction to it, particularly since ChatGPT came on the scene, is to panic, to go, what are we going to do and what should we do? The interesting thing is we've encountered technologies before. We've had technologies come into the classroom. We've had the internet, we've had the calculator, we've had the anything at all that adds value or extends the human mind. And AI is just another tool. So what we have to think about in AI is how can we use it to extend the mind of the student, and how can we use it to support them in their critical thinking, in their engagement in the classroom, and how can we responsibly adopt or develop practice within the classroom that says AI is here, it's in society, it's been used. Now, how can we bring it into the classroom in such a way that it supports that student learning? As remember, we have to both teach about it and teach with it, because that's what the students are encountering. They have it on their phone, it's in business, and now we have to disseminate it in the classroom currently and into the future.
It was great to meet you, and we're very, very grateful at NDSC to have had Med's sponsorship this year, and we hope to continue to work with you all. I think it's a really great focus in the NDSC consortium.
Agreed. We're very happy to provide the sponsorship, but thank you for this and the opportunity and to be involved in NDSC. It's pretty much peanut butter and chocolate. I think it's a natural match, Med and the NDSC. Thank you.
Peanut butter and chocolate. All right. You don't like jelly? Guess someone against jelly?
Peanut butter and jelly works too, yeah. My blood sugar's low, I guess, which is why I thought of that first.
Well, thank you so much for your time and for helping me learn about how to be a better educator. I'll definitely check out the website and resources.